everyone. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast and live on Facebook from the gorgeous surroundings of Peterborough Services, where we've set up this incredibly illustrious set, which Mustard TV would have been very proud of. Hello, I'm Michael Bailey. You obviously won't be able to see that if you're on, if you're listening to it on the podcast, but check out the Pinken Facebook page. I'm Michael Bailey. I'm with Paddy Davitt and David Freezer here, and we're going to check through what has been a very decent 18 hours or so. Time's got away from me, but Norwich City, of course, winning 1-0 at Middlesbrough in the Championship, a result that we probably would have thought would have been beyond them by the end of August, but nothing's very similar to how it was at the end of August, is it really, Paddy?
Forget everything you knew about Norwich over the last 12 months. This isn't the same Norwich. Although it's the reverse, it's almost the reverse of an Alex Neil. Can't defend, could score. This lot can defend, no doubt about it now. We'll get into the records, the stats, the minutes, the hours since they last conceded a Championship goal. It's probably a bit churlish to say, a little bit concerning at the top end of the pitch, but I think we should go positive with this. I think the base is there now. You can make sweeping generalisations after one or two games. I think after five games where you haven't conceded a goal and you've gone to Sheffield United, you've gone to Middlesbrough now, two sides who have started the season well. Middlesbrough, embarrassment of riches, to quote Cameron Jerome, and Norwich have prevailed in both occasions. Massive amount of plaudits to go to that group of players and the head coach and his coaching team, because the transformation from Millwall and Villa is vast. And let's hope they can just roll on now to Reading, get a good result there, and this international break will be far more pleasant than the previous one.
Yeah, which wouldn't be too difficult, admittedly. We should go through the records then, shall we? It's five clean sheets on the trot. You worked out how many minutes it was.
468 and counting, not including stoppage time.
I mean, we're a long way off from football records and all that sort of stuff, but for a Norwich side that conceded eight goals in two away games in the league... Dave.
Yeah, very impressive, isn't it? I mean, we did our team news video on Facebook Live beforehand, didn't we? And none of us were brave enough to predict a win, let alone another clean sheet. So
I think a draw was pushing it at times.
I think you asked me, would I take a 0-0 draw? And I said, absolutely. Very impressive again. Things just feel like they're clicking at the moment. You know, it wasn't a perfect performance. Again, none of these performances have been perfect, obviously, because they're wins by such narrow margins, but they're earning their luck almost at the moment, because they are working very, very hard to get over the line in these games, and they did have to cling on towards the end. Britta Sombalonga could have had a hat-trick on another day, but they did enough to knock him out of his stride. Angus Gunn was in the right places at the right time. Christoph Zimmermann again was superb at the back. I'd say he's probably playing better than Tim Closer at the moment, and Tim Closer has still yet to concede a goal while he's been on the pitch this season. So that's nearly six games. So yeah, things just feel like they're going Norwich's way for once at the moment, don't they?
They do. Likewise, Tom Tribal as well, yet to concede a goal, which is fairly nuts. I mean, you kind of mentioned it, Paddy. I was thinking about this. Norwich have obviously had few issues at home in terms of scoring goals, and you know, away that it's only sort of one goal, but for some reason it feels like it's going to be easier to sort out those goal scoring issues than the issues they had defensively, where you looked at it and thought, goodness me, this is hopeless. And when you think that, you know, they've done it recently without really Nelson Oliveira being fit, and you know, come November, December, January time, they will have Alex Pritchard back in the fold too.
He's the one for me. He's the one. That's why I'm not concerned. You have to state a fact, because our esteemed colleague Chris Wise made the point that from three goals scored, they've garnered 11 points. That's a phenomenal return, but you can't expect that to continue now for the duration of this season. They will need to start scoring goals in more multiples than one a game. But with Pritchard back in the mix, we saw towards the end of last season, scores goals, creates goals, makes everything seamlessly tick in the final third. So that to me is a massively exciting prospect to harness him, which probably for the lad himself would mean him dipping out of the team, because I don't think you can play Madison and Pritchard in the system they're in at the minute. And that would be hard on James Madison, because again last night I think he showed he's now reached the point where you missed him against Bristol City. And for me, he's ahead of Wes, he's ahead of Naismith when fit. And that's a massive compliment to the lad, because he's still learning his trade. But obviously, I think once Pritchard's available, you would have to dip him out. But what we're talking about Middlesbrough squad, what a positive that would be, that you've basically got a lad like Maddison who can bring in as and when and change the game. I mean, you can't overstate defensively what they have done, because they weren't in games. You know, we keep going back to Millwall, keep going back to Villa. Those games were gone by half time. They were just never giving themselves a chance. Whereas now, they're always in the game. And obviously, it helps them when they get their noses in front, as they did again last night, because then they've got something to hang on to. And I honestly cannot, in my experience of covering Norwich, remember a transformation in this relatively abbreviated time frame to this degree, to go from a team who looked completely lost. Dave talked about Zimmerman at Villa, Zimmerman at Millwall to a lesser extent, more Marcel Franca that day. He looked totally out of his depth. Last night, he looked like, and I'll use the word in the paper, colossus. He was phenomenal last night. And he really is the poster boy for this transformation in such a short period of time. And now everything for me is positive. It's looking forward. It's what can this group of players do now this season, rather than this is going to be a long old drawn out affair and maybe mid-table beckons. I think sights can be raised higher now.
And it is a group of players, so we should make the point maybe that Marco Stieperman didn't start because of a knock. He did come on, so it's not too bad. Nelson Oliveira came on towards the end as well, so his knock isn't too bad now, and hopefully both are able to carry on where they left off. But we had James Husband coming in. As far as I'm concerned, the last two or three games, James Husband has looked like the player that Norwich would have no doubt hoped they were bringing in, not the one that looked a little bit lost and was getting a hell of a lot of stick in the opening few weeks of the season for his positionally more than anything. Likewise, Cameron Jerome, yes, he didn't score last night, but the work rate he put in that at least gave Norwich something to feed off at when they did get forward made a big difference. So I don't really have any issues with either of those two performances, whereas, you know, some fans are maybe still inclined to give those two a bit of stick.
Yeah, I mean, very selfless from Jerome. I think that's probably the word to sum up his shift last night, and to maybe a lesser extent on Saturday against Bristol City. He really had to work the channels hard last night for not very much reward. I mean, Maddison, wonderful bit of play in the second half to give him that chance that he perhaps should have finished, and would have, you know, really put some gloss on a special performance. Mario Vrančić as well was unavailable last night, wasn't he, after having shown signs of looking brighter in recent games. And yeah, I'm with you on Husband. I think he stood up to it manfully last night against certainly the liveliest players we've seen against Norwich this season in Adama Traore.
Because he's a ridiculous championship player. It's like he's playing a different. It's like he's playing in the old SWAS and someone's given him 11 speed. It's not. No one can get near. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, he is absolutely electric. Unpredictable as well. I'd imagine he's a nightmare for a manager, because you're going to struggle to harness him. I don't think he knows what he's going to do next a lot of the time. And Husband didn't shackle him the whole time. Tim Closer did have to step across and help deal with him a couple of times, but the biggest thing for me was Marley Watkins realised that he had to get stuck in, he had to support Husband, because he wasn't going to deal with him on his own. And also, Cyrus Christie is almost the Kyle Walker of the Championship, isn't he? He's got a lot of pace going forward, he likes to get the ball in, he's got a good cross on him. So that was a big call for Husband last night. And Stieperman clearly wasn't fully fit when he came on either, was he? I mean, he took one for the team with one booking, didn't he, when he knew he was beaten. So yeah, that was a real team effort last night. And a nice little stat as well, Angus Gunn, you know, that was the first time they've won at Borough since 1988, when his dad would have been in goal. So everything's ticking the boxes at the moment, isn't it?
Very nice. I say it's all very nice for us. Norwich seemed to be annoying everyone else greatly. And the Borough fans couldn't believe this Norwich side that turned up, scored, and then just shut up shop. Imagine doing that as an actual tactic, Eitel. There's that. They were late coming out the second half as well, weren't they? Which they seem to like doing. Later than the home team.
No, that's just Norwich time. That's all that is.
Parker time.
Yeah, man.
I mean, they do seem to be annoying people, opponents, but
little old Norwich, nice old Norwich, lovely place to visit, lovely fans, harmless, they're all, don't get me wrong, they're nice attributes to have, but you know, if you're going to do anything in this league, you need a bit of devil about you, and I have got no issue at all with that. And obviously, you know, keep going back to Mr. Wilder, but I'll guarantee you that they will be adopting similar tactics at suitable points during the season, as will every club in the Championship. So to me, hearing those sort of things is almost a backhanded compliment, because it basically means Norwich are getting under the skin of these teams, and you know, they know now. Gary Monk referenced it again last night. He knew as soon as Norwich got a goal in front, it was going to be a tough night, because they've obviously seen the recent games and how Norwich have set about the task. If Norwich are now gaining a reputation that this isn't a team you can basically run over the top of, as was the case at times last season, then long may that continue.
As was the times last month. I mean, it's as we've said, it's such a nuts turnaround. Interesting little question here from Colin Anderson. Get your questions in. I'm trying to keep track of them here. Was Gary Monk really doing a Wilder with his complaint that they gifted Norwich a goal? I mean, we were probably taking the mic because it's funny to call a 20-yarder a gift, but well, it was poor defending, wasn't it?
I think the reality, he was clearly focusing on the deficiencies in his own, namely Christie, I think, who got harried out of it in a dangerous position deep in his own right-back area. Watkins has profited from that and rolled it to Madison. From the point the ball's been rolled to Madison, there's no gift element to that at all, because that was a wonderful, instinctive finish. You know, the self-belief that a young 20-year-old kid has got there to take the ball, one touch, have a picture in his head, and then execute it as well. The accuracy with which he there was a great camera angle after it, and the ball seemed to me to be increasing in velocity as it went past Randolph and hit the back of the net. The purity of the strike was top draw, and we've seen that. The lad's got that in his locker, but yeah, it was very churlish. But as we've just touched on, you know, if opposition managers are getting the hump, long may that continue.
Definitely. I mean, that's something we levelled at them after the Millwall game, wasn't it? That they weren't streetwise enough. I mean, we stuck it to them in our post-match stuff after Millwall, as all the fans did. I'm sure if Stuart Webber, Daniel Farker, any of the players had watched our videos after that Millwall game, they would have been hurt by it, but they also wouldn't have been able to complain about it. That day was an absolute nightmare. And during that very long international break, when we were all so worried about what was to come the other side of it, we were questioning, does Daniel Farker have what it takes to handle the Championship? Is the step up from handling Borussia Dortmund's B team in the fourth division in Germany, or the fourth tier in Germany, too much of a step up? The guy has answered those questions fantastically, and he deserves a huge amount of praise for the way he's led them through this. And he hasn't shown any element of being a bad loser in the way that Gary Monk or Chris Wilder has he? He's got class, and I think that's something the Norwich fans really like about the guy as well. He's got a personality which is very likeable. You know, they lost a 4-0. He wasn't there going, oh, Millwall bullied us, they were so horrible to us. He just accepted that they were poor on the day, didn't he? And I'm really pleased for him. But this is now the basement, as he's put it, the base level. They've set their standard. They've got to stay above this standard and improve if they're going to have success this season. You know, edging these games isn't going to continue throughout the season, you wouldn't have thought, unless they can get Alex Pritchard and Nelson Oliveira back and firing to give them that extra little bit of quality. They are still going to have to go through more gears to have success this season, I would have thought.
Phil Brooks has been in touch. He says, I'm glad we're annoying fans and managers, tired of being good old Norwich with friends everywhere but going nowhere, which is succinctly put, Phil. If you go to thepinken.com and find the podcast feed, you'll be able to hear from James Maddison, who was, of course, a rather man of the moment last night. Just a little word on Middlesbrough. I mean, one of the iconic images really of last night, wasn't it? Johnny Howson walking over to the Norwich fans to applaud them while Norwich City were having their little huddle post-match behind them, and we'll maybe talk about the effects of the huddle and what have you, because it seems to have captured a little bit of imagination. But Gary Monk's squad, I think I literally said, if he doesn't get that lot up, it'll be a managerial failure, because they do have so much talent at their disposal. The place, we saw flashy lights before kickoff, you know, so they've clearly invested a lot in what's going on there. And we said before the game, is it reminiscent of what Norwich had to deal with last season, as well as what they had to work with?
It's identical for me. It's identical. And Jerome touched on it pre-match Monday when he spoke to the media at Colney, that they are effectively the Norwich of last season as it stands. You know, they've got this, let's be honest, they could put two 11s on the pitch in the Championship and be more than competitive. The calibre of a player on their bench, you know, experienced Premier League operators, Ashley Fletcher, £8 million purchase from West Ham. Bamford, okay, didn't do it at Norwich, but this level previously for Middlesbrough, he absolutely tore up the division. And they're on the bench. It's just, I don't think I've seen a on paper, and that's probably the problem at the minute for Gary Monk. We haven't seen a more powerful squad this season so far, and I don't think we will do. Maybe Villa might rival it, but other than that, but it's translating the raw material that he's got at his disposal into tangible results on the pitch. One of the local hacks after the game in Monk's presser more or less put it to him. He said, "You've got £37 million worth of striking talent there tonight. Never really looked like scoring a goal. Okay, there was one or two chances for a Samba Longa, but for the quality of strikers and forward players they've got, they're not getting enough bang for their buck at the minute." And that, for me, was where Norwich were last season. You know, not so much maybe going forward, but certainly defensively. You know, they for supposedly the talent they had in their ranks defensively, they couldn't optimise what they had, and it looks like at this stage, having seen them firsthand last night, that Middlesbrough in a similar sort of pattern, really. But you just feel that at some point that will click and then they will be strong. But you know, it needs to happen fairly soon, because by all accounts that's been pretty much the fare they've been serving up this season, going behind and maybe then managing to get back on level terms. But last night they found a team too good for them defensively.
They did indeed. I mean, I'd be amazed if they don't finish in the top six, just given all the quality they've got. Alan C. Barnacle, Madison is just pure quality. David Lee, yesterday we did not miss Johnny Howson anymore because we had Tom Tribal. Tribal's passing ability is better and willing to throw himself to the tackle. Tribal for player of the season. Get in there early, David Lee. I like that. You had a nice little line about David Tom Tribal over breakfast, Dave.
I said, yeah, Tribal made Howson look like an OAP. I'll stand by that. I mean, Tom Tribal, it really does look like a find. If he manages to keep his current level up, then he's going to be nailed on for player of the season, isn't he? Unless Christoph Zimmermann also continues at the same level. I mean, he's looking very good. He really has a knack of being in the right place at the right time defensively. When things are breaking down in midfield, similarly to Alex Tetti, but maybe a little bit further forwards. You know, he's a bit closer to the halfway line generally. And yeah, he really got stuck in again. I really do like him. Look, there's good stuff all over the pitch, really. I mean, Yannick Wildskut tried hard, didn't he? He got a fairly harsh booking. I thought all the bookings were a bit harsh, to be honest. The referee was a bit petty, really, during the game. I think that restricted Wildskut a little bit. But he, again, worked hard, didn't he? And I think that's the thing that's been instilled. I go back to a couple of weeks ago when Daniel Farke had said words to a similar extent of, "You've got to defend as if your life depends on it." And I feel like that has got into the whole team now, and they're doing that.
Great footage of the huddle post-match with Daniel Farke and the team. Something they haven't done so far this season, but to me a completely visible sign of the togetherness that's in that squad at the moment, built off, of course, a very good run, which makes it easier. Really interesting to see them do that. Likewise, Daniel Farke taking a couple of minutes just before he spoke to us, and you, Paddy, after the game, just not doing anything, just collecting his thoughts, which I thought was interesting for him to do that in a sort of public place, but round the corner away from everyone else. And I guess we've got to mention the 428 fans who made the trip. I think there were more than 1,000 people at the Beanback back in Norfolk, and I'm sure you all enjoyed the game. But 428 fans on a Tuesday night, I mean, that is reward, isn't it? 3 away wins out of 3 in the space of 10 days, whereas it took them 9 months to pick up 3 away wins before that.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, again, I don't want to sound negative or churlish, but it's the home fans who are probably feeling a little bit shortchanged at the minute, which is the total polar opposite to last season and a few seasons with Norwich away from home, certainly in the Premier League as well. I've always found it far more difficult to replicate that Carr Road consistency, but yeah, that was a long trip, and would have been late when they got back, but I bet it felt a lot shorter journey, yes, shooting back down the A1, because they're seeing a team there now who know the job and are able to dig out results in very difficult situations. Farke himself said, "I'd agree, much like Bramall Lane, I don't think there'll be too many for all Middlesbrough's struggles to click who will go to the Riverside and come back with 3 points." Worth reiterating, that's their first league defeat at home this season. They'd only dropped 2 points previously. these aren't, you know, these aren't statistical quirks. These are, to me, are symptomatic of trends now that are becoming ingrained. And as you say, that was encapsulated, I think, by the huddle, because they felt as a group, coaching staff and players, that that was a significant step forward last night, given the fact it was Middlesbrough away, quite rightly touted for promotion again, immediate return back to the Premier League. To go there, do that with depleted options, you know, you can see the belief. The belief is visibly growing in this group of players, and the test now is, can Farke just keep on at them, keep on their case, don't let anybody get carried away. He talked about feet on the ground. That'll probably segue into Josh Murphy. We're probably going to get there, but he talked about the young lads not believing their hype, and I think that's now, to take Dave's point about Farke, and he's learning as well on the job. He's got through a very, very difficult early phase of his Norwich City career, and he's now into a period where, can he maintain this now? The momentum's there. The stone is rolling down a hill. Can they continue it?
Yeah, we'll touch on Josh now, shall we? Because he's had a couple of questions about it. Josh not involved at all, which I was assuming would be just to give him a rest. But it does seem like something has happened between Saturday's game, when he was involved, and, you know, when Daniel wanted to take his team down to Middlesbrough, and whatever it is, I guess we'll wait to see if he turns up at Reading next weekend.
Well, you probably seen the video now, it's up on our websites. That was my final question to him in the presser. Was Josh rested? Was there an injury? And you could tell his almost demeanour had changed. I think he was composing himself, what he wanted to say, and it was more what he didn't say than what he did say. But he basically said that it followed on from a point about Maddison, where he was talking about Maddison and not trying to get too carried away, and it's important, quote, young players who are told they're the future of the club and how great they are and what a talent they are, that they, quote, need to continue to work and keep their feet on the ground. And then he referenced that more or less in his reply about Josh, that, as I said previously in a previous answer, players need to keep their feet on the ground, and if they don't, I will make sure they do. So you only can read through the lines of what's gone on. Whether he'll elaborate further maybe when we speak to him prior to the Reading game or not, I don't know. Again, we'll get another signal if Josh is involved at Reading or not, but it would be a pretty clear to state that he feels Josh's attitude probably hasn't been what it needs to be, and as a result, you know, he's maybe just shown him a little lesson there to leave him out of the squad, even though he had a lot of injuries. You know, he had Oliveira, Hulan and Stieperman all carrying knocks or coming back from knocks in Oliveira's case, yet he still wasn't tempted to put Murphy back into the bench. That's good management for me, and he's got the results, so he's been justified. And if you're Josh Murphy now, I would think you're looking at that and you're thinking, I want to be part of this.
Exactly.
And if it means he's had a little wake up call and he gets his head down again and starts to work, maybe he doesn't believe his own hype, then again, that's a tick in the box for Farke for me.
Absolutely spot on, because he would have just seen James Maddison do that and pick up all the kudos he could possibly get from it. So I'm sure that'll register with Josh. Reading then, Dave, Saturday evening, a team, not many teams have scored fewer goals than Norwich this season so far, but Reading are one of them, and it's not really happening for them, which, you know, I kind of felt would probably be the case this season after what happened last year. And, you know, they haven't got Nelson Oliveira up front, which a few of their fans were banking on happening as well in the summer transfer window. So I'd have to say Norwich, as much as we were probably wary of going to Middlesbrough, Norwich could possibly pick something up at Reading.
They lost at Millwall last night, didn't they? 2-1. They were 1-0 up, and then Reading scored two goals in, I think, 80th and the 85th
Millwall,
minute.
Yeah.
So Millwall, sorry. So yeah, that was a bit of a crushing defeat for them. They're 18th, 5 points worse off than Norwich in the league. So it's one that, in the current form, Norwich can travel there with a bit of hope. But you know full well that Norwich cannot take their foot off the pedal here. They have got to keep it at the maximum through to that international break, when they can get another chance to regroup, and Daniel can really work with them in the training pitch again to see if they can maybe find that way to try and bring a few more goals back into it. And you know, Jaap Stam has probably got a bit of pressure on his shoulders, I'd imagine, because, you know, they were in the playoffs last year, they were close to promotion, and, you know, Norwich fans know from 2002 that the hangover from playoff defeat is hard to take. So potentially is a good time to go and play them. If they play in the same sort of stubborn way, then I don't think there's anything to fear from it. They lost Danny Williams to Huddersfield, who was pretty much their best player in the summer. They're still relying a lot on Jan Kermigan to score the goals up front, who is 35, I think, off the top of my head. Ali Alhabsi was their star player last year, certainly in goal, and he has gone off to Oman, I think, is his home country, isn't it? So that was a strange one that they let him go so easily. Perhaps they were compensated quite well for it, I'm not sure. So it's going to be an interesting one, but the big thing for me is just avoiding defeat. I mean, again, no one wants to see it, but I take a 0-0 draw now.
Oh, no, we'll have another poll, Dave. We'll have another poll.
Because just to get through, it was, you know, it's 7 games in 22 days this period was, capped off by the Reading game. From that international break where everyone was down in the dumps through to this next one. And we mentioned it even earlier, didn't we, that the dreaded Manager of the Month nomination is probably on the way for Daniel, isn't it? So if they can just get through this period unbeaten, conceding so few goals, well, only one goal at Brentford in the cup if they manage to keep it yet another clean sheet, then, you know, the hopes really can start to grow and people can start to think about what is possible this season from that starting point at the beginning of the season where the vast majority of us were saying promotion doesn't look likely. Hopefully they can push towards the top six, but it's not looking likely. Whereas all of a sudden now they've got that solid base to build from. As Paddy said right at the start of this pod slash vid, once you've got Alex Pritchard back in the mix and hopefully a fit Nelson Oliveira, you can start to dream a little bit.
We're sat in front of a massive glass window. It's absolutely boiling up here. So we're all sweating ourselves off, which is good because we probably had a decent sized breakfast. But So a couple of quick messages before we go. Paul Chesterton, esteemed photographer. Fans were awesome second half. Sat in front of them and they sang the whole way through. He would know, he was literally always right in front of the away fans. I'm sure he's raving about Cameron Jerome's performance as well, wasn't he? Must have been.
He's a big fan of Cameron Jerome now, PC. Yeah.
I'm sure he was. I hope you got home safe, Paul. James Copland, hello from New York, chaps. Well, hello to you, James. Hope it's lovely over in New York.
Hello from
Peterborough Services. Just as illustrious. And one more, just final question to dissect, shall we? James Messenger, thanks for your question, James. Which new signing do you think brings the most personality to the dressing room? Christoph Zimmermann, I've noticed, wears glasses. There you go. Away from the pitch. Not on the pitch yet. Had things kept going the way they were going, he might have had to start wearing them on the pitch, but fortunately, they've improved.
Yeah, he's definitely a big personality, isn't he? I mean, Zimbo seems to be the name which is spreading. Tim Closer had that wonderful line in the club's video with his where he just laughed for 5 minutes, didn't they? Where, what was it? Zimbo eats because he needs to. Wildskut eats because he likes to.
Bit harsh on Yannick, I thought that one.
Yeah, but that shows there's that little bit of camaraderie in there, doesn't it? And it doesn't feel like there's any sort of German cliques sort of evolving, which I'm sure is something that Daniel is very keen to make sure doesn't happen. But Angus Gunn seems quite a big personality as well. Him and Josh Murphy obviously know each other very well, don't they? I would have said the biggest personality, you're probably looking at Closer and Zimmermann, aren't you? Which is not bad to have. You're two centre-backs and Closer is showing leadership at the moment.
I remember asking Daniel actually about how the difficulties in keeping everyone together as a group rather than splitting all up, and he said it was a proper challenge, which I thought was quite honest of him.
Well, Tim Closer's personality seemed, I hate to bring the name up, but it seemed to be too much for Alex Neil to handle, didn't it? He didn't like Tim Closer's big personality. He was, when we did that poll at the start of last season, when the fans overwhelmingly said Tim Closer should be made captain, Alex laughed it off and said something like, "Oh, you don't see what Tim's like behind the scenes." So Daniel has embraced him. He's a 29-year-old. He's not some young buck who hasn't done anything. He's played Champions League for Wolfsburg. So the guy has now embraced what he should be for Norwich City, and long may it continue.
It's all right, Dave. We'll get to ask Alec himself when he comes down in November. Pad, personality?
Yeah, in the whole group, and I wouldn't disagree, because that's, you know, we can see he is larger than life. But I would just like to give a special mention to Ivo Pinto in this run, because there's a guy who's been given the captain's armband, and he's more or less the fall guy then. If this had continued on its merry way in a negative curve, then the lads who've been here before, and obviously, you know, Russell Martin's been subjected to this, he would have been in the firing line, because, you know, it the same issues and accusations, if you want, that they're always thrown at Russell Martin and the older guys about lack of leadership when the results aren't going as they should do. If that is the case, then the reverse is true for me. And Ivo Pinto, he isn't a baller, you can see that on the pitch, he leads by example, but you can't underestimate what he's done. And talking to the huddle, there was a great hug between him and Farker, so you can tell Farke, to me, relies on him heavily, not just in terms of his footballing ability, we all know about that, but just in terms of the personality he is. And I could see him within a dressing room being a very good bonding influence, and you know, he seems to have grown into the captaincy, because I don't think we would have necessarily seen him as captaincy material, and captains come in all shapes and sizes, but he certainly seems to be leading that group of men to some impressive consistency.
Spot on. I think we're done. Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Paddy. Thanks all for watching and for listening, of course. Last mention to Angus Gunn. 5 clean sheets on the trot for a man who hadn't played any first-team football before he came in. Phenomenal stuff. Don't forget pinken.com for all the analysis and reaction that we've got left. I don't know if there is much left, but whatever it is, we'll be there. And, of course, we'll all start building up again to Saturday evening's game, 5:30 kickoff at Reading, and we'll all be at the Madge Stad to follow the proceedings there. And if you're going to be watching it on Sky, then... you know, we can be your second screen and your second set of eyes. Thanks, everyone.